No, you're here for a year.
I'd like to call the Town of Discovery Bay Community Service District meeting to order. If you'd all rise, I'd like Director Tatro to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
President Steele?
Here.
Vice President Graves? Director Dawson?
Here.
Director Simon?
Here.
Director Tatro?
Here.
Thank you. At this time, it's public comments. Individual public comments will be limited to a three-minute time limit. During public comments, the public may address the board on any issue within the district's jurisdiction which is not on the agenda. The public may comment on any item on the agenda that is before the board for consideration. Any person wishing to speak must come up and speak from the podium. There will be no dialogue between the board and the commenter. Any clarifying questions to the board must go through the chair. Anybody? Public comment is open.
You have cards?
You have three.
I've got some yellow cards. Good, okay.
Hi, my name is Mark Doran, and I'd like to pass. Some propaganda that's been on Facebook and on emails, and I just want to address it to the board, council, general manager, and the members of the public that are here. The recall for Director Dawson in progress is pretty nasty from both sides. There have been email threats from Sweden that Director Dawson has stated that he knows about. There have been private Facebook pictures from Halloween party questioning two of the petitioner's family values sent on several trash blogs and email blasting. Director Dawson was involved in calling me a known internet stalker, Don Flint being called an office bully in the recent series of stage false complaints at Safeway. That was fraudulent and a clear violation of election laws. A recent page from Director Dawson's own Facebook sent in an email, the childish names calling and intended to harass petitioners, is our collaborative work of Brian Dawson, Jennifer Mixon, and I believe Mr. Bob Mankin, who is an appointee of our supervisor. I have taken the time to make copies, validates claims of improper behaviors by a representative of our board that are slanderous, false, defaming, but most importantly, a true picture of what Director Dawson represents within our community. My belief is that our district representatives should act in a mature, professional, and rational manner. These behaviors would not be tolerated in any company that I'm aware of and are clearly financial liability to the district and ratepayers. In the past couple years, there have been many examples of childish and unprofessional behaviors, viral emailing of wanted five scalps for my malcontents, angry confrontations in the parking lot that I had to put my children in my truck to avoid, a note passed to pass President and council was going to kick President Graves' ass for not voting him on the communication committee. Emails to citizens on failed security efforts to our community that were not only offensive but personal. Members of the board expressing concerns over his broken hand and him living in Livermore for the more recent emails that show the same mindset and immaturity with poor judgment. CSD is a multi-million dollar entity that has liabilities in the daily operations. Director Dawson should not be an additional liability. The last email that calls me pretty boy, kind of flattered, but and that I'm wanted for trespassing and general douchebaggery, it's a pretty clear cry for help and for many angles. And it shows the insincerity of his press admissions of his mistakes. I'm just a little flattered that Director Dawson and Bob Mankin find me pretty. That may explain their sense of loyalty to each other. His last sentence in the email, if seen, please call my mother and tell him to run along home, just might be the best answer. My mom's not with us anymore, so nobody can call her. Director Dawson's mother did call Jeff Barber over the weekend, hysterical, and begged him for Jeff Dawson and the other folks to stop picking on
them. We've got 15 seconds, please.
This recall will bring some needed change to our community, some civility, cooperation with real priorities that are tangible with mutual respect. Thank you.
Thank you, Ray. Any other comments, please? Mr. Richardson, please.
My first comment concerns Vice President Gray's failure to make a full accounting regarding his false accusation against me regarding his mental illness. At the last meeting, he said that he will present his evidence at the next February 15th, 2012 meeting. You have my January 26th letter to him, which suggests that we not waste valuable time in a board meeting debating his accusation. I suggested that he put his evidence in writing and that we deal with it that way. I hope that you will convince him to do that so the next board meeting is not turned into a circus. My second comment concerns questions that remain unanswered regarding the benefits program, which at one time was approved for the directors. You also have my letters on that matter, and the request for answers is not going to go away until you answer them properly. Thank you.
Thank you. Any more comments, please?
Good evening, gentlemen. My name is Tom Alarcon. I've never been to a CSD meeting, and that's actually why I'm here.
Welcome.
It was brought to my attention that my name was brought up, mentioned on the blog, because I did indeed sign the petition that Mark Dorn just mentioned, and that I've never been to a meeting. And I'll say that both those things are correct. Unfortunately, I don't think you have to come to a meeting to get a sense of some of the toxic behavior that's been taking place here. And I'm not involved in the individual incidents at all, nor do I care to be. I'm not here to attack anybody personally. I don't know you personally. But I can tell you that from a voter's standpoint, some of this behavior, the Facebook things, the illustrations, just the general lack of respect for constituents who disagree with individuals on the board, it seems really defeating. As I look at this, it shows a lack of professionalism, I think professionalism could be expected from board members. It shows a lack of integrity, it shows a lack of maturity, and it shows really a lack of respect for constituents. We're going to disagree at times, people are going to disagree with this, that's the nature of our nation and the political process, and I find it disheartening, and quite frankly, I'm a little embarrassed for some of the board members who've been doing this, if they have indeed been doing so. Lastly, the reason I'm telling you this is that, to me, the fact that people do this, the fact that the decision-making process that they use to do this is intact, and that they use the same decision-making process to make decisions for me as a ratepayer, this is what worries me. The human psyche does not allow for different neurological pathways for decision-making. There's one. We have different parameters, granted, but it's one pathway. So to me, when I see this going on, people exhibiting this type of behavior, whether it be the bullying, the name calling, so forth, it really takes away from my confidence in the ability of those people to make decisions for me as a ratepayer. Okay, and last but not least, you probably know this, but what's really interesting about the pushing, the bullying, and these are my descriptions, is that I'm sure a lot of you know this, but the psycho-emotional root of bullying, is actually fear. It's a fear-based behavior. And quite frankly, I like somebody on my board who handles fear a little better. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Any other comments, please? Last call. All right, public comments are closed now. Item C, area agency reports and presentations. Sheriff's office, please.
Good Good evening, everybody.
How are you?
I'll apologize up front. We had a computer glitch. I don't have reports to hand out, so I'll owe you two next month. Again, I apologize. We got some of them printed, and then something went haywire, and we weren't able to get everything done. So I have all the data. I just don't have handouts, so I apologize for that. The big thing on the list, as I'm sure most of you have heard, we had a series of thefts from autos over the last weekend, and that's the big topic. Unfortunately, in every single case, every single car was left unlocked, and items were left in the vehicle in plain view, which goes back to sort of a basic point that I always try to make with any community I talk to, that don't leave things in your car in plain view, lock your cars. That's, you know, a key point. I always tell people, I'd love to live in that perfect utopian society too, where we can leave everything unlocked. Unfortunately, we don't, and we need to do that. We need to lock our cars and not leave valuable items in plain view in the car, which is a problem. Aside from that, though, we did get some great responses from the public to help us solve the crimes. A lot of people have surveillance cameras on their driveways. Some even pan a little bit onto the street. We got some good video of the cars, and someone even got a license plate for us. And that's why I've asked Deputy Hamblin, who's in the back of the room, to be here. He's acting as the investigating officer for our end. He's been following up on the leads, and he could probably provide a more detailed account, because he's been talking to people and working with them about where we are in the investigation right now. So I'm going to turn it over to him for just a minute to fill you in, and then I'll step back up when he's done.
Good evening. As Lieutenant Johnson was saying, probably 10 or between 10 and 15 incidences of people obviously leaving their cars unlocked. We had one lead where a citizen saw a vehicle, got a license plate for us. I followed up on that and came back to a vehicle in Richmond. I had Richmond PD do an outside assistant and go check the vehicle, come to find out plates on the car that we had in Discovery Bay were actually stolen from his car, and he was driving around with plates from a previous stolen vehicle out of Lafayette. So we're back to a little bit of ground zero. I do have video surveillance, both from residences as well as from Safeway, where some of the stolen credit cards were used. I have descriptions of the vehicles. I have descriptions of some of the people, and we're just doing some follow-up, trying to ID these people. But to stress what Lieutenant Johnson said again, you know, we don't live in Mayberry. Unfortunately, I know you guys live in a nice area, but you still have to take the same precautions in protecting your property and protecting your families. You gotta lock your cars up, you gotta lock your houses up. Don't make it easy for these guys, because that's one of the biggest motivations for these guys, is the ease. If I can spend 2 hours walking up a small little section of Discovery Bay, and I can get $300, $400, $500 worth of equipment, it's worth it to me. If I only have to do is lift the door handle and the door opens up, and I can take the GPS, I can take the computer, the purse, whatever, it's worth it to them. They're not going to take the time necessarily, and I'm not saying always, but they're not going to take the time to try to force their way into a car, because that gives them more time to be seen. So do what you need to do to protect your property. Obviously, your house is included in that, your family members. So again, I'm actively trying to locate these people, try to identify them. And if anybody has anything they want to help us with, any information, I would take any of your suggestions. Also, in the future, if you see anybody that you don't know around your, you know, whether it be at 4 o'clock in the morning or whatever, give us a call. We'll do our best to get out there and try to identify some of these people. Make sure that they're where they're supposed to be and when they're supposed to be there. So, anybody have anything for me?
Yes, ma'am. What time of day was this?
We're not sure of the exact times. There was a vehicle that was actually stolen. It was around 4 o'clock in the morning when that occurred. The credit cards were being used in Safeway at 6 o'clock in the morning, and another again at was used at 8 o'clock in the morning. So
let's say this was nighttime.
It was nighttime. It was sometime Sunday night to early Monday morning. Anything else? Thank you.
We do have a couple of theories that we're still working. We hit a bit of a dead end with the whole license plate thing because the plate was stolen off another car, which was stolen. But we have some working theories that we were kicking around today, and we'll be talking to our detectives to see if any of them will lead anywhere. But it's too early to say at this point. But the license plate's still going to be our strongest lead. I have some hunches. So does Deputy Hamblin, and so does our day shift sergeant. We have some ideas. So it's not a dead end yet. We're working it, but that's it. So. Other than that, it was, I'd say it's a good month because that kind of ruined it, but other than that, nothing outstanding jumped out as far as the month of January went, other than these events right at the end. So, any questions of me?
Yeah. Any thefts on the water?
There were a couple of thefts from the water. There, we had one burglary from a boat. That's it. We had one theft off the waterways, and that was it. So, relatively minor in that picture. Anything? Question more there? Yes, sir.
The one house burglary, at least on there, January 1st.
There were actually two residential burglaries. There were one of them, in one case, our victim thinks they know who the suspect is, probably a friend, and they've asked that we hold off while they do some inquiries at this point, so we're allowing them to do that to see if they can get resolved. Oftentimes, if law enforcement steps in, everybody shuts down, things come to a grinding halt, whereas if one person confronts another, sometimes you get a little softening and get some movement. So if that fails, then we'll step in. The other one, it was, if I remember my stats correctly, it was it's not a vacation home, but it's not a home that's regularly occupied. And the person, or at least they were gone for a few days, and that's when the break-in occurred. So again, no leads on that one. This is nothing of that nature. Yes, sir.
What was up with the trespassing over at Safeway?
It wasn't a trespass situation at all. Safeway called us, and it was Safeway or the shopping center management ownership, and there was a discussion about whether or not the petition gatherers would be allowed in the lot. Safeway told us they didn't want them there. We advised them, and they said, okay, we'll leave, and that was the end of it. It wasn't a trespass.
A little different from Safeway, but
yeah. Yeah, that's the extent of what's in our report. That's all I know.
Great. So,
yeah, cool.
All right. Any questions? All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you all. And again, I apologize for not having a report. I will have doubles for next week. For next month.
Fire district? Okay. Supervisor Pifo's office?
I'm here. Hi, good evening. First want to start off with letting you guys know that Supervisor Pifo was put into the chair of the board for 2012 on January 10th, so she will serve for the entire year. Next, I'm not sure if I let you guys know or not, but there is an interim director for the Veterans Services Office. We are sad to still see Phil Munley leave. He was excellent, but we look forward to working with Forrest Hoffensnyder. I may have pronounced his last name incorrectly. We did get a request from your general manager for Supervisor Pifo to come and present a Delta update to your board. She looks forward to doing that in the near future. We just got to get the calendars aligned. On Delta-related matters, Supervisor Pifo is scheduled to again travel to Washington, D.C. to advocate on the Delta and other county-related matters in March, so we'll keep you updated on how that goes. We moved our offices with the redistricting. We've shifted more staff out to Brentwood, so our Brentwood office is now the main office. Our new address is 3361 Walnut Boulevard, Suite 140. I know Farron knows how to get there because she dropped off plans on Monday and came and had a visit, so she's the first one from your group to come visit us. Next, Supervisor Pifo was honored to attend the Chamber State at the Town Gala a few weeks ago and provide a county update, as well as present a resolution to former CSD member David Pifo for his service to both President Steele and Vice President Graves. And lastly, the Delta Conservancy has asked that we distribute these. They will be hosting a series of meetings seeking input for their strategic plan. There is one we want to highlight. It's in our area. It's on Antioch on February 7th from 3:30 to 5:30 at the Community Center. And I do have a copy of their press release as well as a flyer that state all five of their workshops that they're having. So I'll give this to you guys. And I'll put some in the back as well. And with that, that is all I have for you.
Anything, Steph?
Just that we posted the press release that Karen was referring to our website already.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank
you. We had a great time at the State of the Town.
I heard it was great. Thank you.
All right, committee liaison reports, transplant report. Anybody here? County Planning Commission report, anything?
I spoke to him yesterday about this, and John Oberlin from the county, and he will be coming to the board probably the second meeting in March or the first meeting in April to give an update on some of the projects that are taking place or that are being proposed to take place.
Code enforcement report.
I attended the code enforcement meeting in Supervisor Pifo's office on their last day there. I guess we were in the middle of moving, we walked to the boxes. I expressed our concern from Discovery Bay regarding boat trailers, abandoned cars, mostly boat trailers that are left out in the street. I was assured that that is an ongoing issue that they're working on. We didn't have any other issues at that time, and I will do a written report and I will turn it in. That's about it.
Thank you. Special districts? Nothing? Okay. I want to let the board know I attended the Byron Union School District board meeting on Thursday, January 19th. I think overall the board and the staff are being really effective. They went over and discussed there's a new program where it's a program where they help children that are struggling or falling behind on their academic goals, and maybe some of them have a language barrier, and so they've got special intensive classwork and one-on-one work where they're able to go in and take these students aside and give them some concentrated studies. And it looks like these kids are able to get caught up in a short term. Some of these kids, it just takes a few weeks of getting on top of them. Sometimes it just takes a little organization and getting through their paperwork. Some of the kids need special English training or, you know, classroom activities. And so they're trying to get these kids, they don't want anybody to fall behind. And so that's what they're doing. I was impressed with the presentations overall. There's a new transitional kindergarten program that was enacted by the state. That's amazing. There was no funding mechanism for this. And it sounds like it's kind of a preschool plan. And it basically changes the kindergarten start date or when their birth date's where the cutoff is. But it's unfortunate that there's no funding mechanism here, but they make these laws. So another thing, too, is they completed their audits and their general bond audit. And overall, they have an excellent rating. So good job on that. And our next meeting is going to be on February 16th. And I encourage the public to get involved with that. Thank you. Let's see. All right, immediate consent calendar, staff.
I'll make a motion to approve the consent calendar.
I'll second that.
Any comment? No comment? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. New business and action items. Item one, the discussion of the possible action of Discovery Bay Lighting and Landscape Zone 8 appropriations limit override expiration. Staff?
We're bringing this item, Mr. President, members of the board, members of the public, we're bringing this item to you tonight more as an informational item than anything at this point in time. Pursuant to what's known as Proposition 4 or the GAN limit, or what ended up becoming Proposition 13B of the state constitution, we are required to conduct an election when our appropriations limit exceeds the override. Again, it's a complicated process, but what ends up happening is once we exceed the monies, once we're going to exceed the revenues that we get from this is from our landscaping and lighting zone number 8, we have to have an election for the override in order to do that. We had an election back in 2008, and we do not anticipate an override this year, and so we're not recommending that, and the elections are good for 4 years. We do not anticipate the override to take place, so we're not recommending one. It would only be once property taxes begin to pick up, and we would have it at that point in time. Baron, I know.
Rick pretty much covered most of it. Because the override is going to expire this year, we're at a point where we have to choose whether we want to do another override election, which costs about $20,000, or we're going to just let the override go and use our the GAN limit with the each year you're allowed to. When the proposition started, there was a baseline limit. Every year from that point forward, you get to adjust that baseline limit based on cost of living increases, population changes, and for the most part, every year that has increased since 1978, I believe. Because we are, our baseline limit with those additions is already over what we are bringing in, it's not necessary to do the election. Even should something happen before the taxes are collected or distributed next year and our appropriations exceed our limit, I believe we have 2 years to kind of go back and correct that. And so we can initiate an election override at that point. But for now, we're safe on where we're at.
This is just more of an informational item. If the board chose to pursue the election, the override election, we would do so. But at this point in time, staff doesn't believe that it's necessary. In the event things change, we can always bring it back at a later date.
Okay. Any comments? Any public comment? Please come to the podium, please.
I just have a question for clarification. Your first sentence in the exec summary says that Zone 8 receives funding through a portion of property taxes collected within its boundaries. Is it part of the property tax or is it assessment like you pay in Zone 61?
No, it's not an assessment. It's part of the property tax.
Oh, so they don't pay any, people in Zone 8 do not pay an extra assessment like the zone up in Discovery of West Bay. Interesting. Thank you.
All right. Well done. Any other comment? All right. Thank you, Darren. Item 2.
Bert. Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. This item before you this evening is to adopt a procedure relating to the sale and relating to the disposal of surplus personal property, not real property, but personal property. In October of 2010, the board adopted Resolution 2010-15, which adopted a revised purchasing and procurement policy for the district. In that policy, Section 11 provides directions to the disposal of surplus supplies and equipment. After reviewing that section as it relates to some of our items that we need to surplus dispose of, I didn't feel that that section was adequate that would be able to provide the necessary controls that would need to be in place in order to provide a level of oversight that I thought was appropriate for a public agency. So what we've done is finance manager has identified and put together a procedure to the purchasing and procurement policy. This is the procedure that we're recommending that would accompany and be a part of that policy that was adopted back in 2010. It gets into different methods of disposal, including surplus, donating, selling it, throwing it away if it's broken, trading it in for new materials if there's a trade-in value from one product to another product, or just scrap itself and disposing of it in that manner. It also provides for a donation of surplus property. That would generally be, and it spells it out primarily for nonprofit agencies and primarily for the school districts. If we have equipment that we deem to be surplus, and if it, the value of that product property is less than $1,000, then pursuant to the proposed procedure, then reviewing with staff and myself, we could then make a donation to the school district. If it's for its sake, if it's, for example, a computer monitor that we no longer use, or a computer, sometimes it's easier to donate it to a school than it is to dispose of it. It would be less expensive to do that. And so that there's opportunities that are for that. If it's over $1,000, it would come, there's a $1,000 trigger, and under those circumstances, the item would come back to the board for final authorizations to whether or not the board concurs with staff's recommendation, whether or not to dispose of it, sell it, throw it away, or whatever the case may be, and including to donate it. There is a corrected attachment number, an exhibit B, a corrected exhibit B that was handed out to you today. I have to admit that we plagiarize things, and this came from a city. If you review your original documents, and the city was needed to be replaced by district, so we apologize for that. But in any event, it doesn't change the process at all. So if you have any questions, at the back, actually, exhibit C, there's a property item description flow chart. If you've had a chance to take a look at that, and explains under what circumstances, what values, if something is broken, throw it away, if it needs to be sold as scrap, how to dispose of it. And so if the board has any questions, we'd certainly be happy to answer them. And Dean is here in the room as well, and she can address any questions you may have as well. Thank you.
Yeah, I've taken a look at it, and I don't have any questions either. I think it looks good, very clear, and I like the process there. So, any public comment? No public comment.
I'll make a motion. Okay. Go ahead.
I make a motion we adopt resolution 2012-05 approving the procedure for the disposal of surplus personal property.
I'll second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. I think I've given my report. I think the town's doing good overall. We had the state of the town meeting and the function, and I think the chamber did a great job of putting that together. It was like a great turnout, good representation, and a lot of new faces there. I understand they had some good charity auction there as well, some success there. So thank you, Chamber. Other than that, does anybody have any comments, directors?
I do.
Director Dawson, please.
I wanted to thank some of the fresh faces in the audience for coming out. I wish it was under different circumstances, but I appreciate you attending our meeting and taking interest in what we do here as a board. Over the last couple months, 3 months, I think it is, I've remained pretty quiet in face of what has...
Can you turn your microphone on?
My microphone is on. In the face of what has been spread around the community, and I'm a little troubled that at my own meeting, the meeting of our board, that people will stand at this podium and just flat out lie and slander a human being. I have said it to numerous individuals, and I'll say it to all of you today. I've had nothing to do with the emails that have gone out. I don't know how many times I have to say it. I wanted to reach out to individuals that were called out in those emails, but I didn't want to appear as if I was intimidating them by calling them. I do appreciate one thing. I appreciate the fact that not one policy decision that we've made on this board in the 2 years, the 777 days I've been here, there's not one policy decision that the proponents of the recall can point to and question my ability to make decisions. We've made sound policy. We've pushed this district forward and prepared it to be sustainable in the future, and I'm proud of that, and I'm proud of working with my fellow directors. We all don't get along all the time. We have our differences, whatever. When it comes down to it, we have worked together to push this district forward. It's unfortunate that in this day and age, you know, with the internet and the ability to just send something off without a name, without a face, with no accountability or transparency, and you can say the most excruciatingly brutal and cruel things humanly possible. And there's something wrong with that. I hope that from this, those of you who have come today for the first time or for the first time in years, I hope you come more often. I hope you get active. I hope you are a part of the promise that we can bring to Discovery Day, the promise of keeping this district fiscally sustainable, you know, improving our infrastructure, our parks, and our community. I appreciate the time to speak, President Still, and that's all I have.
Manager's report, staff.
Yes, I have two this evening. At a prior meeting, Water and Wastewater Manager Virgil Caney gave a report to the board regarding some of the leak history over the past year, and the board requested that he come back within the board, within an additional 2 years of history. He is here to do that this evening, and when he is through, Farron Perez is going to give a kind of a little brief year-end wrap-up on the parks and landscaping, what has been accomplished in the past year.
Good evening. In the end of or early part of December, I talked about the number of water main leaks that we had for 2011 within Discovery Bay. And what we constitute is a water main break versus a service break. A service would be something that deals with off the water main that's generally down the middle of the street. We have generally a 1-inch line or a 3/4-inch line attached to that, which then brings the water to a water meter box in the front of your property. And from there, there's again a 1-inch line that takes it to the front of the house and then throughout the house. We call that a service leak. Anything on that line would be considered a service leak. The 8, 10 to 16-inch water mains that are in the street, if we have any breaks in those or any valves in that sense or a fire hydrant type of a thing, that would be a main water leak, so forth. And so I brought you that information again for 2011. And then there was a request by the board to maybe go back a couple of years and bring back some of that additional information to what the prior years were. And so let me go back to 2009. And before I give you the numbers, generally within the just first quarter of the year, the Department of Health sends all water districts a request and ask for how many gallons did you produce the previous year, how much water did you sell, wholesale, that type of thing. Also part of that is how many customers do you have. They break it down by residential, commercial, irrigation, other. And then you also talk about how many leaks did you have. You also talk about, did you have any complaints like brown water calls or odors or the water tasted funny, that type of thing. Anyways, every year we have to produce that report and send that to the Department of Health. And so what I'm reading to you is off of that report that we sent to the Department of Health for 2009 and 2010. Over the years, we are getting better and better at our numbers, meaning keeping track of that. In the past, when we were really small, if a call came in to us either at home or on the weekend, or even in the office at times, we did not log it down on a sheet. We went out to fix it and didn't keep track of those numbers. And it was really in 2010, late 2009, 2010, and on that we're keeping better records. And I'm sure we probably miss a few here and there, but we'll be getting better and better at it as we move along. So, in essence, the service leaks for 2009, we had 73. And then in water main leaks and breaks, we had 11. So it had a total of 84 for 2009. 2010, we had 85 service leaks. And we had 7 water main leaks and breaks. So we went down in the mains and breaks, but we had a little bit more in the service leaks, which came up to a total of 92. Now, a service leak, in our eyes, is anything that leaks water. I'm just trying to give a perspective here of a leak. We may have in a water meter box, and I'll educate you a little bit more every time here. You have a curb stop inside that water meter box that shuts the water off. Within that curb stop is a rubber washer, and it deteriorates over a period of time. Hence, it starts to drip. Sometimes it drips a little faster than normal. With the clay soil, it builds up water over a period of time, and then it just overflows, comes out of the water meter box, and just seeps out of there. We consider that a leak, and we consider it a service leak. So once we get those type of requests, or we see that as we travel down the streets, we stop, we pump it out, we look and see if it is the washer. If it is, we replace it. We fill out a form saying we had a service leak at this address, and we move on. Uncompared to a water main leak where we now have to bring in construction equipment and we dig up a street, so forth, that's a little different. But some of these numbers I reported to you are just replacing those washers. They weren't physically a leak in the street, but it is still part of the service line. Okay, any questions? I know I gave a lot out to you, but apologize.
Can you just give the public some examples of what to look for and how to reach us?
I constantly stress that anytime you see excess water, it could be either a sprinkler system that's continuously running. We'd appreciate a phone call so we can go out there and investigate and then also send a letter to the resident explaining that. Lately, we are on a ban. We are on a looking for fire hydrants primarily that are camouflaged. And we are looking to rectify that by sending home letters to homeowners who have a fire hydrant in their yard, and they have to have a 3-foot spacing around that. We have some that have grown a tree right next to the fire hydrant, right behind it, actually. And the fire department, if they had to come there to turn on the water, that tree would be in their way. So in essence, but we can't, we can only do this periodically, so we're trying to step up on that part of it and do that. And but if you see any water, it could be water coming down a gutter that's excessively, please call us. The district has no problem going out to verify it. We had for about 2 weeks, we had a water leak that wasn't really wasn't the town's responsibility, but it was a homeowner's responsibility. And they had a slope, as you most homes here are built on a little kind of like a levee peninsula. And so the water main goes up, and there was a break in the middle of their yard, so the water's flowing down towards the meter box, over the curb, and into the gutter. And so during the winter months, it gets cold and gets slippery, but it was a lot. We've gone over to that homeowner probably 3 or 4 times, asking them to take a look at that, fix that right away. In this particular case, turned out to be a home that's in foreclosure, and so the customer really didn't want to spend any more money on it. They were trying to do a short sale on it. And we got to the point where we have an ordinance in place where we can issue, shut them down within 24 or 48 hours, giving them written notice. And we were just about ready to do that on Monday when I gave them a call, a heads up, this is coming. And Lord below, they fixed it. So it's done. So, any questions? Anything else? The residents, any questions? Yes, ma'am.
Do you have the number available to call? Because I have that going on in my neighborhood too.
Oh, which?
The water in the gutter thing, but what's the number to call for that?
634-1131. You can call 24/7, leave a message. We're only here 8 hours a day or 10 hours a day, but all right, thank you.
We've also have a website that allows you to send us a message, and you can log your name or your email address in a comment or a message, and the staff checks those regularly, and we can also follow up with that too. Thank you, Virgil.
Good job. And Farron's going to give her report.
All right.
Rick asked me to kind of go over the projects or some of the projects that we did in 2011 that were completed then. I went through and I picked some of the ones that we did, or the majority of the large ones, and compiled them here. I think you're going to see some of the same pictures that we've seen over the last year or so in various meetings, so apologize, hang in there with me. Before I start, I just wanted to say that there's a lot that we did this year as a department that is not, you're not going to see pictures of. I don't have the opportunity to recognize or acknowledge my staff, and so I'd like to do that now. But we have two parks and maintenance workers, Bob Abity and Esteban Rocha, who do an excellent job in keeping things going and maintained and vandalism cleaned up and anything we need during the year. And then Sue Heinel, who keeps it running from my end and keeps me sane. So I appreciate them. The first project that completed in 2011 was the Ravenswood solar lighting. I actually couldn't believe it, but I didn't have any pictures of our solar lights in the park. But the one on the right is actually what's in the park. We put in five lights total, and they look great. If you've ever had the chance to go over there at night, I went trick-or-treating this year in that neighborhood, and the park looked fantastic. They weren't too obtrusive. They were, you know, they worked perfectly. We haven't had any complaints. They've been wonderful. Is this the next one was this splash pad project. Was also at Ravenswood Park. This is when it just started getting started. I'm going to go through a couple real quick on the construction there. It's an interactive play feature for kids, a zero depth water fountain per se, and it also completed in January, but we didn't open it until April in, of 2011. This is one of the shots when the kind of the first day we had it going, and then one from the grand opening event. In February, we did some work at Cornell Park. We replaced all the bathroom partitions. We still are getting people trying to go in there and etch things, words, and graffiti on there. The new partitions are holding up great. You can almost rub out scratch marks in them. Graffiti comes right off with the cleaners, so we've been able to maintain them a lot better than we had with the previous ones. The infield renovation project, we extended the infield for at the request of the Pony League, who reserves that every year, and they supplied the materials and we supplied the labor. That was the project after it was completed. We did the Cornell Park playground replacement project that completed in September of this year, but that started, I think we demoed the playground in early spring of 2011. We started construction in May and we opened in September. So this is when we took out the original playground that had been there. It looked like that for a few months before we got started. And then going through construction on the project, we did a tile seat wall, which is actually still going. We only have about 50 so or more left, so if anybody wants one, if you want your name on the wall. And almost, tile painting. And then the finished project. In May, we did the Sandpoint Discover Bay Boulevard project. This is the one that went to bid. This actually started in 2010. It was one of the first things I did when I came in, is we came and took out a bunch of trees along the boulevard, and it didn't make everybody happy, but they were found to be unsafe, and with the levee situations we had there, that we ended up taking them out. This is what it looked like after the removals. We had irrigation and drainage issues along the boulevard. Just ice plant, a lot of bare areas. Demoed all of our existing vegetation, trying to salvage as many of the mature trees that were left as possible. And we upgraded all of our valve box areas. So we put in a two-wire system, which is on irrigation. It just allows us to work with a different type of clock so that we could get alerts if there were leaks. Mm-hmm. This was for, again, for the levee situation there that, you know, we didn't want to have breaks there and not know about them. And that completed in May. We did the opposite side of the road. We did in-house, and we used a lot of the same plant material. Some of it's a little different. We finished that this September. These are before pictures of the boulevard on the east side. And then, again, there's Steve. So basically, we did that whole project with two guys, the whole side of the road. And it took a month or so, but it looks, they did a really good job. And thousands of plants they dug holes. finished pictures there. And the basketball court is the newest addition. Technically, it's this year. It just finished, but we started it last year. It is actually done and open now. This was the before picture at Regatta Park. During grading, it was very wet when it started. Kind of got lucky with the weather and dried out and got to finish it on time. Vapor barrier, it looked kind of like a swimming pool for a little while, but that's we're actually going to put like a tennis court surfacing on top of the basketball court, so it'll be painted and that vapor barrier will protect that through the concrete. And this is what it looks like as of 2 days ago. So that's your new basketball court.
How's the reaction from the council?
Well, there's tons of people out there that we weren't even done with our walkthrough. And we had kids coming out and playing. I've had some people stop me in the park just saying that they were glad that it was being used. And I've also received an email of concern. So it's kind of been both. Do you guys have any questions? Or?
No, great job.
Great job. Yeah. You're doing a really good job steering your stuff.
No, I just wanted to say thanks, Aaron, because what you guys have done in the last year has just been absolutely amazing. And I really appreciate it. And with the basketball court, I got an email of concern. But I also got a thing of tamales from one of the families that one of the boys came in and did.
You didn't share?
I was hungry. But no, it's a very, I think, more positive reception than negative.
Yeah, I just want to thank Farron. I think the staff and I know some board members were involved in these projects, and I really think it really does make it a lot nicer place to live and play, and I think these are great things and great assets for our community, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You know, it's important that we do these types of presentations, not just for the board, but for the public as well. You know, you may live in a part of town, you may not be familiar with something that's taking place in another part of town. So you get a kind of an overview. We've touched upon every single park in Discovery Bay this year, with the exception of Slifer, and that one's not far behind. The landscaping improvements, the park improvements are all certainly successes that we can all be proud of. And Farron and her staff do a great job, but I'd also like to thank Virgil and his staff for the work that they do as well. We've got a lot going on. We'll be talking about those items at our next week's meeting, at our special meeting next week, which I'll get into in a moment. But more importantly, with respect to the basketball court, I think that there's a challenge that is going to take place between the five board members and maybe five members of the staff. So look for that invitation in the near future.
Make a really short memory.
Thanks for the update. General manager's report.
I mentioned the special meeting next Wednesday evening for the water and wastewater master plan reports. They are both completed. I received my final copy of the water master plan, I believe on Monday or Tuesday. So that will be posted to the website probably tomorrow or Friday. The agenda for that meeting will go out on Friday as well. I do have a couple things of concern that I wanted to update the board and the public on. With respect to the State of the Town event, I'm sure it was just an oversight because he's not here this evening, but I did want to recognize Vice President Graves for being awarded the person, Citizen of the Year for the chamber. Secondly, I don't know if you've been out here the past couple days, if you've driven in or out, but you've noticed our Vactor truck. out here at our backwash tanks. We drained the backwash tank, opened up the hatches, and it's a really gooey, nasty sight inside. But it's doing what it's supposed to be doing. So that was a good thing. They're moving over to, I believe, Newport tomorrow.
Next week.
Next week. So those tanks get clean on a 3-year cycle, and so this was the time for that cycle. We did have a sanitary sewer overflow on Saturday afternoon Willow Lake Road, just north of Marlin. It was reported in the middle of the afternoon, I believe around 2 or 3 p.m. Initial estimates are that it was approximately 700 gallons, of which most of it was collected and returned to the sewer system. But we do believe that there are about 200 gallons that did reach the storm drain system. Notices were distributed to all residents impacted by that. All of the regulatory reports have been filed, and this is the exact same location that we had one out last year. And when the Veolia crews went in and were cleaning up, trying to determine what the cause was, there were large amounts of grease that had built up and blocked that sewer. And so we're going to go ahead and put that on the list, and it's going to be videotaped, I believe,
Monday.
So we're looking forward to seeing that, since it's hit us twice in the last year. Last year, I believe, it was 100 gallons. Nothing hit the sewer. Nothing hit the storm drain, but this time it did. So all the reports have been filed, and there will be more information coming at the next board meeting when Veolia will be giving their monthly report. And that's all I have this evening.
All right. Any questions, comments? All right. Legal?
No reports, sir.
All right. Thank you. Committee updates. Not aware of any committees that have met this year. No? Okay. Correspondence. Byron Municipal Advisory Council meeting minutes have been posted, and a letter from Supervisor Pifo regarding the P6 Citizen Advisory Committee for Discovery Basement posted. Public records request received. Request from Thomas Peel, 2011 employee and official payroll. Request from Mr. William Richardson regarding Director Dawson's 118.12 comments. Future agenda items.
Recreation Committee. If we could do that at the next meeting, that'd be fantastic.
I'd like to have an agenda item to prepare a proposal to for an alternative site purchase for the community center, and I'd like to bring that up, I guess, our special meeting. Mr. Howard, would that work?
We can certainly add it to the agenda, to the regular agenda item for that.
All right. Thank you. Comment, please.
You may recall our discussion some meetings back about the impact of water softeners on the copper pipe, and along the line of that excellent water leaks history, I wondered if we could have a report on that in some coming meeting. Thank you.
I think we're working on that. Okay. Without further ado, I'd like to adjourn the meeting.